Alaska has long been known as an effective and strategic point for deploying military assets to other places in the world. How could that change in the future? Russia has been making headlines in Alaska for testing our airspace, and now concerns over possible security breaches at the White House involving Russia are rattling lawmakers on both sides of the aisle. Senator Dan Sullivan joins us today to discuss security, Russia, and the future of the military in our state on Talk of Alaska.
Today's program is underwritten in part by
First National Bank Alaska. For nearly a century, First National has been Alaska's community bank. Learn how experience and local knowledge make the difference at fnbalaska.com. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. Senator Dan Sullivan is a member of the Senate Armed Services Committee, as well as the Committee on Commerce, Science, and Transportation. He also serves on the Veterans Affairs and Environment and Public Works Committees. Senator Sullivan is a lieutenant colonel in the Marine Corps Reserves, and he joins us from the Senate building in Washington. Hello, Senator Sullivan.
Hey, good morning, Lori. Good to hear your voice.
Thanks for being on with us today. You can join our conversation at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-TALK. If you're in Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Senator, we're here to discuss the military in the Arctic, but first I have to ask a couple of questions about some national stories. The day after President Trump fired FBI Director James Comey, he met with Russia's foreign minister and ambassador. The Washington Post and now other news outlets have reported that the president revealed potentially highly classified information about the Islamic State and terrorism monitoring. How concerned are you about this information that's coming out now?
Well, look, I'm concerned, and I think one thing that's important to recognize is the Russians certainly aren't our allies, and they've been acting for years, but in particular during the election and their movement into the Middle East as a, you know, as an adversary of the United States. So I think first and foremost, it's important that the president fully understands this, that that's not like you're talking to an ally in the Oval Office like it would be if it were Japan or Korea or Britain. And, you know, I do know General McMaster well. I guess he went on another press conference today. I have a lot of – I actually served under him as a Marine. That's our national security advisor. He's got a lot of credibility. So I haven't seen what he has stated with regard to his latest press conference. Clearly, there's an interest, both Democrats and Republicans, to get to the bottom of what happened in this instance, Lori. And, you know, I think it raises a broader issue that I've been trying to emphasize with the White House, which is, you know, we need discipline in terms of what's going on there. The president got elected to focus on growing our economy, getting the economy back on track. We certainly need that kind of support with good policies in Alaska, given that our economy's in recession right now. We got a lot of challenges, but a lot of opportunities. He's been focused on rebuilding our military, which I know is also a lot of Alaskans are very supportive of that. And to me, we need to start being able to focus on those things that he campaigned on that I think are really important to not only Alaska, but to the country. And when, you know, there's these kind of stories that are coming out that, again, we got to get to the bottom of it. The media doesn't always get their initial stories accurate. It does take away from the ability of the Congress and the executive branch to focus on these big, important issues that I think most Alaskans are very focused on as well.
Well, Republican Senator Bob Corker, the chair of the Foreign Relations Committee, said that the administration is in a downward spiral and chaos is creating a worrisome environment. What do you think? I mean, it kind of references what you just said about this this lack of discipline. What do you think needs to happen now?
Well, look, I think getting back to my original comment, you can bring in staff that brings in a disciplined process on how to focus and work on issues. And sometimes it seems that that's not there right now. Every White House, to be honest, when they start, goes through growing pains and has to figure out how to operate not only the levers of power, but the interagency process, working with Congress. There's a learning curve. But from my perspective, the things that Democrats and Republicans agree on, we got to get back to, which is strong economic growth. They have some very good ideas. I've talked to the president about it. I've talked to the president quite a lot about helping Alaska grow our economy, bolstering our national defense. In my view, I always focus on also taking care of the most vulnerable in society. But they need to set up a disciplined staff process that's going to get there. And, the president's ability to focus on these things, not tweeting every morning, is also something that I think would help with it.
If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska. Senator Dan Sullivan is on the program today with us. He joins us from a studio in Washington, D.C. at the state capitol, or at the national capitol there. Senator Sullivan, the allegation is that the president revealed what is referred to as code word information. What is that, and what kind of security classification does it indicate?
So again, Lori, I haven't gotten the brief on this. We're actually going to meet later this week with the deputy attorney general on the other issue relating to the Comey firing. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure we'll be able to talk about that. You know, there's different classifications, and again, I don't know what was allegedly revealed or what was revealed, but you know, there's what they call top secret. And then there's top secret, what they call SCI, which is specialized compartmental information, which are usually kind of, you get read into these programs. So they're usually programs that are on a need-to-know basis that you, that they have code word designators that relate to that kind of top secret clearance.
Are you concerned, Senator, that during this meeting, Russian media was allowed in, but not U.S. press?
Well, again, I want to get to the bottom of what exactly, and then, you know, a lot of times in Oval Office meetings, they'll let the media in at the top of, like, the meeting, like for a media spray, some pictures, and then the media is typically ushered out, whether that was the case. I would imagine that was the case in this meeting. It would be highly unusual for whether Russia or U.S. media to stay throughout an entire Oval Office meeting. The Oval Office meetings I've been in with President Bush, media comes in on the top, and then they're ushered out. But look, the point I made at the top, Lori, which is Russia is not our friend right now. Russia, in my view, I was just at the Arctic Ministerial in Fairbanks a couple days ago, which, by the way, was a great event, a really good event for Alaska, wonderful job by all the folks in Fairbanks and in the interior. But you even saw at that ministerial the tension that exists between the Arctic nations, which include, of course, America because of Alaska, and Russia and Norway and Canada and many others. But there was tension. And in my view, almost all that is because of Russia's aggressive actions in the Arctic, Russia's aggressive actions in the Middle East, Russia's aggressive actions with regard to our democratic process and election this past fall. And to the extent that we make sure everybody in the administration recognizes that, including the president, that's important. Now, I think the vast majority of the president's national security team, which I think is a very strong national security team, including H.R. McMaster and General Mattis, who's the Secretary of Defense, they know that. As a matter of fact, in his confirmation hearing in front of the Senate Armed Services Committee, General Mattis was very focused on the fact that, you know, Russia is a adversary that doesn't share our interests. So we just need to make sure everybody recognizes that. You can have meetings with them. I had a nice chat with Ambassador Kislyak in Fairbanks. But they're not our allies. And you share certain information with our allies. As a matter of fact, there's five countries that get specialized access to top secret intelligence that we share with key allies. They call the Five Eyes. You can imagine who that is. It's the UK, Canada, Australia, and I think New Zealand is the other member. But other than that, we restrict even intel to some of our own allies. So it's important to keep those practices that safeguard our intelligence assets continuing.
You, I want to move to the firing of Director James Comey. You had said that the timing of the president's firing the FBI director raises questions that need to be answered by the administration. The president has given some interviews on the subject. Has he now answered those questions? Is there something that he could say that would show to your satisfaction that he did not fire James Comey over the Russia investigation? He contradicted his own spokespeople who said it was because of the Hillary Clinton email situation. But he came out and said, you know, he was thinking about this Russia thing and Trump, and that was his statement about why he had fired the director. What could he say that would show that he didn't fire him over this? Because that would seem to be a possible obstruction of justice, would it not?
Well, look, when I initially read about the firing, I was actually just on my way up to Fairbanks for the ministerial, and I put out a statement that said, you know, the president, I don't think anyone disputes that the president has the authority to choose a director of the FBI whom he believes will best lead the agency. But what I did say was the timing here raises questions that need to be answered by the administration, whether it's the president, whether it's the deputy attorney general, who we are going to be meeting with, all 100 senators here in the next couple days. And I think that's where we're going to have to drill down on some of the different responses that we have gotten. I read the deputy attorney general's memo, and he laid out a case on why he was fired. As you mentioned, Lori, then the president said something else. And, you know, it goes back to this broader point that I talked about, discipline. But related to discipline is credibility. And one of the things that's really, really important for the White House to be able to execute policy, whether it's policy with the Congress, as I mentioned, I'm very focused on these key issues that I think most Alaskans are focused on: growing our economy, strengthening our national security, making sure we take care of the most vulnerable in society who fall through the cracks. But having a White House that speaks with a voice that's credible, that's consistent, helps with regard to credibility in the American people. But it also helps, and I know we're going to get to the topic here on national security, with regard to our standing in the world. So to me, I have been very focused on encouraging the White House to speak with credibility. And, you know, there's not going to be, I'm certainly not a senator, this, you know, even though I'm a Republican, who's going to try and defend the White House when I don't think they're speaking truthfully to the American people. So that's what they need to do. That's what I've certainly been encouraging them to do. And when there are different explanations on an important topic like the firing of the FBI director, it undermines credibility, and that doesn't help the White House, doesn't help their ability to move important legislation forward with the Congress. And, you know, I think it even undermines some of our ability to get important national security and foreign policy goals accomplished in the world. And as you know, we have a lot of challenges internationally that we're looking at right now.
I have one more question related to this, and then I want to get to the phones because we have a lot of Alaskans on the line. Some lawmakers, Senator Sullivan, have called on the president to turn over any recordings if he has them in relation to Director Comey. He said that the director better not leak any recordings that he may have. Should the president be compelled to do this, and should former Director Comey be subpoenaed to testify before Congress about all of this?
Well, I think that the, you know, the tapes, if they're relevant to the investigation, if there are tapes, right? So let's make that clear. If they're relevant to the investigation, that they should be turned over. My view on the broader investigation, and when I put out my statement on the firing of Director Comey, is that I said, you know, we need to continue these comprehensive investigations, both being conducted by the FBI and the Senate Intelligence Committee into Russia's involvement in the 2016 election and to the possible illegal unmasking of private citizens by federal officials. But it's really important that the investigations be free of political interference. Now, the good news on that, Lori, is that I made that statement right after the firing. Since that time, the acting FBI director said that they were definitely full throttle continuing the investigation. And thus far, it's been free from political interference. And if he were pressured one way or the other, that he would inform Congress. So that was acting director McCabe. And then, as I mentioned, the deputy AG is going to be coming over to brief the entire Senate in a couple days, which I think is important. And the Senate Intel Committee, which is, you know, made up of a lot of, I think, very strong senators, Democrats, and Republicans of good character, long service to the country. I know all of them. They said they are continuing their investigation in a bipartisan way. So all of this is continuing. But, you know, the one thing that I did mention that I think, and this goes back many years, and this is really Democrats and Republicans in my view, but I really believe that it's important that we get back, particularly with our major government institutions, to the rule of law, you know, whether it's the Justice Department, whether it's the IRS, whether it's the FBI, whether it's the White House. And, you know, I say this extends back. I mean, the first real, in my view, view of when our main law enforcement agencies started to lose their way was with the horribly corrupt and illegal prosecution of the late Senator Ted Stevens. Hmm. You talk about undermining the rule of law. And by the way, that was under a Republican administration. And then it's, you know, it's continued. And what we need to do is get back to the rule of law and trust that these important institutions have in our society, whether it's you know, the Justice Department, the FBI, the IRS, the White House, and, you know, I've called on both Democrats and Republicans to work together on that important issue, and I think most Americans and Alaskans agree with that.
Well, we're going to go to the phones. Senator Sullivan, Shelley is in Delta Junction. Hi, Shelley.
Hi.
Do you have a question?
Hello. Yes. Yeah, Senator Sullivan, I'm really glad to hear that you say you believe in the rule of law and that there should be a further investigation, but that investigation doesn't seem to be happening as Republicans control everything, and it's their responsibility. The president has lied repeatedly. I don't know if you didn't hear the president come right out of his mouth that he fired Comey over the Russia investigation, but I heard it. I saw it on tape. I heard it. Why? What does he have to do before you Republicans will admit that you need a special prosecutor?
Well, Shelley, you know, I was just out in Delta just, about 4 or 5 days ago, so it was great being out there. And, you know, what I've said with regard to my approach with the president is that, you know, I've been supporting policies that his administration has been putting forward and personnel. You know, obviously the Senate plays an important role in terms of advice and consent on confirming the executive branch senior positions. So I've been supporting those where I think that that is in the interest of the country and Alaska. But what I haven't been supporting, what I don't support, is behavior that I don't agree with, right? As I mentioned at the outset, I don't think the tweets and the insults help with regard to moving policy forward. You know, most policies in the Senate, we need to move in a bipartisan way, so that's important. But I guess I would disagree with you a little bit, Shelley, on the fact that you said that the investigation on the Senate Intelligence Committee is not moving forward. I think it is moving forward. I think that, you know, it's been a little bit of a different dynamic on the Senate side versus the House side in their investigation, which is kind of run into a little bit of partisan gridlock. But I think, to me, what's important is that that investigation move forward, and, you know, we get updates on it, and they're very, very focused. I think they sent out some subpoenas recently. And then that the FBI investigation move forward free from political interference. So until I don't see if those things are not happening, and I'm keeping a close eye on it, I'm not on the Intel committee, but I like I said, I keep a close eye on it. If I think those things are stalling out and are not happening, you know, then I would consider a call for a special prosecutor. But right now, those kind of checks and balances on the broader investigation into Russia's activities in the election continue, in my view, to be working. And by the way, working in a bipartisan manner.
If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska, and Senator Dan Sullivan is our guest today. We're discussing a wide range of issues, and we'll get to the issue of the future of the military here in the state. Right now, we're talking about questions of national security and Russia. You can join us at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-TALK. If you're calling in Anchorage, the number is 550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. We're going to go to Homer now on the phone. Scott is in Homer. Hi, Scott.
Hi. Thanks for having me. And I want to first thank Senator Sullivan for his service in the military and through the years. And now as senator, this is the first time I've really heard him. And I feel very reassured. So the issue I'd ask to talk about is the Russians. And as a family, we moved to Anchorage, actually Fort Rich, in 1957. So I'd grown up with Nike sites, and when we moved to Fairbanks, Clear Air Force Base, the Dew Line, the Russians were a very real presence. And when Alaskans are treated as if we're not really a part of America sometimes, it's annoying. And, you know, when our governor was mocked for saying that she could see Russia from, you know, from
Scott,
her
do you have a question?
Whatever she said,
can you get to your question, please?
From Bristol Bay, it's pretty close.
Scott, can you get to a question? We have a lot of callers stacked up.
Well, right. I just want to establish I've been here for a while, and The following in the footsteps of Uncle Ted is important, and I was glad to hear that reference. And I was proud to vote for Lisa to keep her on. So when we talk about reaching across the aisle, in many ways I don't agree with what's going on, and I'm very reassured that the senator is seeing Alaska as a unique place, which of course it is. Why do we not have more, you know, icebreakers? Why are we, you know, having the Russians testing us again with their airplanes? And this whole thing about what the president's doing with the Russians, to me, is like life and death. I see climate change as an issue of life and death, and healthcare is life and death. My family and I went through quite a bit of travail with cancer. So just making those general statements is enough for me today.
All right.
And so I think it's important that the senator hear this and that Alaska hear, whoever's listening, that at least one person who often is considered, you know, a Democrat or whatever, is very reassured. So please, you know, continue with your service. And the issue with Russians is really important to me.
All right. Thank you, Scott, for that call. Let's go to Diane.
So, Lori, I can comment real quick.
Sure.
On what Scott mentioned. By the way, I was Scott, thank you, and thanks for the kind comments. I was actually out in Homer recently, too. So we did a town hall out there a couple weeks ago, and one of the things that and you may have been out there, Scott, but I saw a note from the commander of the USS Hopper. He was a Navy ship that was part of the Northern Edge exercise that did a port call in Homer. And he said, in my 24 years of service, sailors and I had never been greeted in a more patriotic and outstanding fashion than the citizens of Homer, Alaska, when we got off and there was a line of hundreds of people and flags and everywhere. So thank you to the citizens of Homer. We talked a little bit about that during my town hall. But, we do have a lot of challenges right now with regard to Russia, whether it's their buildup in the Arctic, as I mentioned, a lot of their other activities, and I can get into this in a little bit more detail.
Yeah, we certainly will.
Lori, but, our military forces, which we're trying to expand, play a critical role in our nation's defense, and as Scott mentioned, I think it's already been five times in the last month we've had the men and women based in J-Bear doing the intercepts for the NORAD mission with regard to Russian bombers coming in. So, Scott's right. Our unique location makes us an incredibly important part of our nation's national security.
Let's take one more quick call before we have to take a break at the bottom of the hour here. Diane is in Anchorage. Hi, Diane. Do you have a quick question?
Yes, I agree with what Shelley said. And for a long time, I have been aware that the real security issue for America is cybersecurity and economic, such as banking. We don't need traditional missiles or traditional warfare, despite what North Korea is doing. We need someone who can understand the modern issues and really pay attention to them. I think a lot of the money that's spent on traditional things, such as missiles like at Fort Greeley, are not well placed, because after all, what's going to happen if North Korea does send the missile? They don't even have enough food or boots for their people. They're not going to invade us. Let's get on to cybersecurity and economic security.
All right. Thank you, Diane. Senator Sullivan, do you want to react to Diane's
Sure.
concerns about our focus?
Yeah, I think, Diane, I would agree with two-thirds of what you said and disagree respectfully with one-third. I do think we need, at Fort Greeley and throughout other parts of the state, a more robust missile defense, because although you're right, Kim Jong-un and North Korea, they're very poor. When you have a dictator who seems intent on, being able to range the United States with an intercontinental ballistic nuclear missile, I think we need to make sure that we're building up our missile defenses. So in the horrible event, if that ever happened, that he tried to launch something like that, we'd have the capability to shoot that down. And I'm going to be introducing a bill here in the next couple of days that looks to make our missile defense for our nation even more robust. But your point on cybersecurity, I think, is directly dead on. And I don't think we're doing enough. We've had a number of hearings on the Armed Services Committee. I think it's commonly recognized that we don't really have a broad-based strategy on how to think through this new security issue, which, if you saw the newspaper over the weekend, it's a growing threat, and it's going to impact everybody. And then Finally, on economics, I couldn't agree with you more. You know, the basis, ultimately, in my view, of America's strength as a nation, even our military strength, it's all based on our economic power. And right now, our economy, both in Alaska and nationally, has been not growing nearly at the levels that it has for decades under Democrat and Republican presidents. And we need to do more to bolster our economic security. So I agree with you on that, too.
All right. Thank you, Senator Sullivan. We're going to take a quick break. And when we get back, we'll have more questions with Senator Dan Sullivan as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from this APRN member station.
Alaska Pacific University delivers a distinctive educational adventure designed to support your personal and professional goals. Their online, evening, and campus-based courses make education accessible and will fit into any busy schedule. Be motivated by a devoted faculty and creative, independent-minded students. Apply now at alaskapacific.edu. Moving life ahead with APU. This message sponsored by Alaska Pacific University.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend, and Senator Dan Sullivan is our guest today. Senator, one more question about national issues, and then we'll move on, although some callers on that are stacked up on the line might have other questions. But I wanted to ask about the replacement for the Affordable Care Act. We have an email question from Bill in Petersburg. He says, President Trump boasted during his campaign that he had a health care plan that would cover everybody, cost less, and provide more coverage. He wants to know, how does the Republican health care plan meet this standard? And Senator, to you, what do you want to see in the health care bill? Are you happy with what the House passed, or what kind of changes would you have to see in order to support it?
Well, look, I think that you probably heard, Lori, that we're doing our own bill, right? So there were some elements of the House bill that, I think were important. The House bill doesn't touch, for example, the Indian Health and Reauthorization Act, which was an important part, actually, of the original Affordable Care Act. That's kind of been left as is, which is important for a very large number of Alaskans. But, there were things that I don't support in the House bill. And what we're doing right now is that we are literally on a daily basis working through this. And one thing that I really appreciate, I'm sure some of the listeners have been part of this, but, you know, literally since the election, I've been meeting with all the different stakeholders, as many as possible in Alaska. I think the number is well over 1,000 in terms of the meetings. These are different stakeholders, some people who think the Affordable Care Act is great, other people in our state who think the Affordable Care Act has been a disaster. As you know, I think on balance, the Affordable Care Act for Alaska and the country has done more damage than good. And, you know, I won't go through all the list of things that have happened negatively to Alaska that have taken place since that bill was passed. One thing I'm not trying to do, which was what the president, previous president, and his supporters of that bill did, was make all kinds of promises that, never came true with regard to you can keep your doctor, the costs are going to go down, premium costs are going to go down, all that. And obviously, none of that happened. My priorities, there are some things that I mentioned in the affordable. What I like to say is kind of repeal and repair, because there are elements of the Affordable Care Act that I think are important, even from a national level, to make sure we keep. So the issue with regard to pre-existing conditions, being able to stay on your parents' insurance till you're 26, No kind of lifetime caps. These are all things that are currently that were part of the Affordable Care Act that I am supportive of. But then there are other things that, as you know, that are coming down the pike. I'll give you one example that doesn't get enough press. The Cadillac tax, it's part of the Affordable Care Act. That will crush almost every single plan in Alaska. I believe close to 90% of plans, either in the individual market or employer-provided health care, will get hammered. Union health care plans. That increase in premiums that will come with the Cadillac tax, up to 40% under the Affordable Care Act, will make our very high costs of insurance skyrocket even more. One of the things, I'll give you two others that I'm very focused on. As you know, Lori, I've been very focused since I came to the Senate on this challenge with regard to the opioid addiction problem. Yes. In our state, across the country. Hopefully you've seen, we've been sending a lot of federal dollars to the states. We had a $1 billion two-year program in this bill that was signed in December. The CARA Act, the Comprehensive Addiction and Recovery Act, which I co-sponsored, that got signed. We sent a bunch more money to the states there. And then just this budget deal that I voted for, the president signed last 6 months, had almost a 600% increase in funding for opioids, up to close to $1 billion just in the next 6 months. So I actually believe we need to do more, even under the Affordable Care Act, because this is such a big crisis. And then finally, on the difficult issue of Medicaid expansion, for your listeners who have written me about this, I've written a very detailed letter to all my constituents who have written in about their concerns on Medicaid expansion. This is a challenging issue because certain states expanded, like mm-hmm. Alaska, that population. Other states didn't. In trying to find a sustainable path forward, what I've said on my focus on that is, if you were part of that expansion, I don't think you should have the rug pulled out from under you as part of whatever the next reform is going to be. So those are some of the broader-based principles. We're working on it literally on a, you know, almost hourly basis here, and we still certainly want to encourage people to write or call in on this, because I know how important and personal and complex the issue is for Alaska and the country.
And we do have a caller on the line. Seth is in Fairbanks and has a question about healthcare. Seth?
Thank you very much for taking my call. Unfortunately, the previous caller just stole my question almost verbatim. So I wanted to switch it up real fast. As a lifelong Alaskan, I was wondering if you would join Senator Murkowski and the late, great Uncle Ted, who I interned for, in opposing the Pebble Mine.
Well, that was a switch.
Seth, well, I would, yeah.
I thought we were going to get a health care question.
In Fairbanks, too, and we held a town hall there, too. So we're getting callers from all the places that we've just been in the last 3 weeks. Look, I'm not going to speak for Senator Murkowski, but I do actually think you may misstate her position. My position is very similar to hers, which was, and Don Young's, which was, I had a lot of concerns, both when I was Attorney General and DNR Commissioner, with the EPA's what we called a preemptive veto, where they hadn't let the project go through the permitting process, state or federal, and essentially said, hey, this economic development project on state land, without having gone through permitting, we're gonna say no to that. I think everybody in the congressional delegation has had concerns about that, and I continue to have concerns about that. You may have seen there was an announcement on a settlement between the EPA and the Pebble Partnership just a couple days ago. And when that came out, you know, I said my focus was the concern on the preemptive veto, but also the other thing that I've consistently focused on is saying we can't trade one resource for another, meaning we have an incredible, amazing resource there, which is
The salmon,
the Bristol Bay sockeye run, which is the biggest salmon run in the world. I think 55 million salmon last year. And I've talked, Senator Murkowski and I actually recently talked to Director Pruitt on this issue. We hand-delivered to him and talked to him about it, a letter from all the different leaders and stakeholders in Bristol Bay that they wanted us, that had a whole packet of information and a letter to him. We wanted to make sure he saw it, read it, and then we talked to him about it. So the permitting process, I think, at the state and federal level, which Pebble hasn't even started yet, if they ever do it, it should be very rigorous. It should be fair. And if they can't prove that they can't do a project like this without putting that other amazing resource at risk, then the project shouldn't go forward. But the ability to actually move forward, which is our law, both state and federal, to move forward to go through permitting is it needs to be rigorous, and they have the standard to meet. But I don't think a federal agency should just preemptively say no to that.
Let's move on. We've got lots of callers stacked up. Mark is in Bethel, and then I do want to get to some of the issues about military matters and the future of Alaska and Arctic security. But Mark, do you have a quick question?
Sure. Good morning, Senator. Thanks for taking my call, and thank you for your thoughtful comment.
Good morning, Mark.
Between the United States and Russia. When President Trump signed the executive order lifting the Arctic drilling ban, he also erased the Bering Sea Climate Resiliency Area, which strengthened the consultative process with communities and tribes in the region and the federal government. Was your office consulted by the White House during the executive office drafting process, and did you support eliminating the resiliency designation? And what do you have to say to the residents of the Bering Sea Coast and Islands, and especially the Bering Sea Elders Council, who requested the climate resiliency designation from the Obama administration?
Thanks for your question, Mark.
Well, Mark, it's a good question. And, you know, the elements of the consultative mechanism in that previous executive order, I think, were important. Interestingly, in terms of consultation, I found out, you know, I didn't see that executive order and didn't find out until what was going to be exactly in it. We had just heard it was going to be a rollback of the Chukchi and Beaufort lockups by President Obama, which, by the way, he and Sally Jewell never informed the delegation about. So there was no consultation there. And then on the day before, I was informed by my staff that the Bering Sea issue was also going to be addressed in the Trump administration EO. But in terms of that process, to be honest, the Obama administration never consulted the congressional delegation on that. When that EO was issued, it was a surprise to me. And those the Alaskans who were putting forward the idea, we never were reached out to during that time. So what I've been saying is all of us need to do a lot better job on consulting each other. And having spoken to a number of different leaders in the Bering Sea, I can say there wasn't clear unanimity on the agreement of that executive order issued by President Obama. Like I said, we weren't consulted by the Alaskans who were advocating for it. The Obama administration never gave us a heads up on it. So I think overall, in my view, it just underscores the fact that we all need to do a better job in terms of stakeholder engagement. And there is an element of that executive order that I actually think is really important, which is the consultative mechanism in there with regard to Alaska Native groups and other stakeholders in the region. And that's something that I'm certainly always trying to abide by. It was something I really emphasized with Director Pruitt just a couple days ago when I passed on the information from the Bristol Bay stakeholders on the pebble issue. So I think going forward, that's something we can all learn from and focus on.
This is Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. Our guest today is Senator Dan Sullivan. You can join our conversation at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-TALK. If you're in Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Senator, let's move on to some Arctic security, military matters. The Russians have been building infrastructure along their Arctic coastline the last several years, ports, airstrips. Are these military assets or normal civil projects with an economic aim? How do you see these?
Well, Lori, I think that's a really important question. And, you know, if they're normal economic projects, I think that that's fine. I think, though, what's happening is you're seeing a posture with regard to Russia's activities in the Arctic that goes just beyond basic military economic projects. You know, they've had a couple really major military exercises, and you know, tens of thousands of troops and dozens of aircraft and Navy ships. Just 2 weeks ago, to much fanfare, they President Putin showed the interest that they have in unveiling their new Arctic military headquarters. They in brand new buildings in the Arctic that's kind of control the four new brigade combat teams that they've stood up. Four new brigade combat teams in the Arctic. They've stood up a new Arctic military command. And then as Scott mentioned earlier, you know, they've had five bear bomber approaches to the sovereign airspace of America and Alaska just in the last month.
Yes.
Which is more than we've seen in decades. So yeah. I think when you look at that, you have to recognize that there's something going on here more than just trying to bolster their economic opportunities.
Well, and along that line, as you mentioned, there's been five Russian military aircraft coming into close to the Alaska coastline, still in international airspace, certainly legal for them to do those things. It's not unprecedented. These have happened before, but this is a cluster of incidents that some security experts and Russia experts from the Center for Strategic and International Studies have said that they're testing the U.S. readiness in this way. You're part of the Armed Services Committee. What's the conversation in that committee about why this is happening now and your level of concern about these?
Well, I think it's happening now because the Russians see the Arctic as a strategically important area of the world. And in that regard, I would agree with them, whether it's, first and foremost, the people that live there, and that's Alaskans for us, but it's also the opening potential with the receding sea ice of transportation routes. You know, Putin himself has called the Arctic transportation routes the new Suez Canal that can dramatically decrease the time and cost of shipping ships from Europe to Asia. Of course, the natural resources in the region, and not just oil and gas, but renewables. I mean, there are enormous strategic important national security interests and economic interests in the Arctic to America and to Russia. On the Armed Services Committee, there's been a growing interest on our posture and our national security strategy in the Arctic. So I'll just give you one example. It's not just the two senators and one congressman from Alaska that are concerned about it. I put forward a bill that was incorporated into the National Defense Authorization Act 2 years ago that said, hey, we don't really have an Arctic strategy in terms of national security. The Secretary of Defense needs to put forward a no-kidding, serious strategy that looks at our strategic interests. It looks at what we should be doing in terms of our national security. and to the credit of Secretary Carter, who was President Obama's Secretary of Defense, and Secretary Mattis, the new Secretary of Defense under President Trump, they put out, was kind of in the crossover of the transition between administrations, a new Arctic strategy, much more serious than the previous one, on what our national security interests are, how we need to engage in the region. And Secretary Mattis said that he believed that this is key strategic terrain for America, and we need to do much more in this area. And I think that's a bipartisan view.
We need to take a quick break. I'm sorry to interrupt you. We have to take a quick break. We'll be right back as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from this APRN member station. Older Persons Action Group publishes Senior Voice, Alaska's only statewide publication for seniors, and is an excellent source of information for families and caregivers. SeniorVoiceAlaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
Let's take another call. Penny is in Anchorage. Hi, Penny. Do you have a quick question?
Good morning. So I know you're focusing on the military in Alaska on the program today, but I'd like to ask about some areas of softer power, including in the context of the president's proposed budget. So like you, Senator Sullivan, I'm a graduate of the Master of Science program in the Georgetown School of Foreign Service. I believe strongly in the power of diplomacy and foreign aid to help achieve our goals abroad. And I'm concerned about proposed cuts to both the State Department and the U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID, in the Trump's in his proposed budget, and what that means for our influence abroad. And I served in the Peace Corps. I know firsthand the usefulness of our aid programs and the power of diplomacy in forming relationships with friends and allies. So what are your thoughts on this? As someone who has studied the art of diplomacy, and like me, I'm sure has many former classmates who have made their careers in this field. So do you support diplomacy and foreign aid as a counterbalance to some of this military spending? Thanks.
Thank you, Penny, for the question. And Senator Sullivan, you worked in the State Department at one point in time.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree with what Penny just said. I think she makes a really good and important point. And I think even General Mattis had a very famous quote recently saying, hey, if you're going to cut the foreign aid budget, then the State Department and our aid, then you're going to have to buy me more bullets. So Penny's point about them, these issues going hand in hand in terms of bolstering our national security, I couldn't agree more. And, you know, she mentioned that there are probably people that she and I went to graduate school with who joined the Foreign Service. One of the things that we're going to be doing here soon, I'm doing it with a Democratic Senator Chris Van Hollen from Maryland, is we're launching soon, and Penny, hopefully you'll appreciate this, what I call the Senate Foreign Service Caucus. So on the Senate side, there's a number of caucuses, right? There's the Marine Corps Caucus, the Army Caucus, the Navy Caucus, and these build kind of constituencies in the Senate in favor of these important organizations. Well, believe it or not, there's never been a caucus of senators who get together to help find ways to promote the men and women in the Foreign Service. And you mentioned it, Lori. You know, I served as an Assistant Secretary of State. You know, I also served overseas as a Marine. But one thing I like to mention is I've seen diplomats that go into very, very dangerous situations. The diplomats deploy every 3 years. Their families sacrifice. So I think it's really important not only support the budget, but actually the people. And we're going to do that with our Foreign Service Officer Caucus here when we launch it in the next week.
And let's, I want to get a quick question in here. We're running out of time. We should have made this a 2-hour program today. How do you see Alaska fitting into the nation's overall defense profile in the next decade? Does that vision involve growth, changing the state's current role as a hub for air power, strategic defense, cold weather training? How do you see this fitting in the next 10 years?
Well, look, I think that, you know, I like to talk about how Alaska constitutes three pillars of our country's military might. We are the cornerstone of missile defense, and with the threat from North Korea and Iran clearly increasing, I think we're going to need to do much more. And I'm going to be introducing a bill, bipartisan bill, I hope, as early as this week, that will do that. You mentioned it. We're the hub of air combat power, and with the F-35s coming to Eielson combined with our F-22s already, we're going to be probably the only place in the world that's going to have over 100 what they call fifth-generation fighters, F-22s and F-35s, in addition to all kinds of other aircraft. Again, because of our strategic location, I think that's going to be increasingly important for the Arctic, for the Asia-Pacific, and JPARC, which is our training ranges, are the best in the world, by far. So I think that'll increase. And then, you know, we are a platform for expeditionary troops, the 1st Striker Brigade in Fairbanks, the 425, the Airborne Brigade Combat Team that we worked hard to make sure when the Army said they're going to get rid of them, that, you know, that was probably the biggest thing I focused on my first year in the Senate, was to get the Army to reverse that decision. And, you know, this is good for the country's defense, Lori, but, you know, it's also good for the economy of Alaska as well. In the FY17 budget right now that's coming to Alaska, that we're going to be spending close to $600 million in Alaska on building up these forces. That's just in 1 year. I think that's going to be great for our contractors, union members, workers. And we're going to – I think it's important to continue – that, and as long as I'm on the Armed Services Committee, I'm going to make the case of how important this is, not just for Alaska, but for America.
Let's get one quick question in. A caller from Juneau, Jennifer, is on the line. Jennifer, do you have a quick question? We've got just about 2 minutes left.
2 minutes. I might just make a few statements then and see if the senator can respond at some point. You know, the GOP likes to say that the ACA has been a disaster, and I just heard the senator say he agrees with that. And as a nurse who's worked in emergency rooms and in public health for 17 years, I'd like to ask the senator to explain, perhaps, how he thinks health care worked prior to the ACA.
All right, and we only have less than a minute, Senator, if you can make a couple comments here, and then we're going to have to wrap it up.
Well, Jennifer, look, as I mentioned, healthcare is obviously a personal and complex topic. And I'm not saying that it was working great prior to the ACA. And I'm trying to move forward on what we need to do to help Alaska with regard to our significant challenges and structural issues that create healthcare costs that, you know, outstrip any other place in the country. So we have structural concerns that existed in Alaska prior to the ACA, that existed in Alaska, that are going to exist after whatever bill that we are going to be that we're working on now. So that's going to be my focus. But I do think that the ACA exacerbated a lot of the challenges here. We only have one insurer in the individual market right now.
Sorry, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you to Senator Dan Sullivan for being our guest today on Talk of Alaska. Next week, we'll be back. Thanks for listening.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by First National Bank Alaska. For nearly a century, First National has been Alaska's community bank. Learn how experience and local knowledge make the difference at fnbalaska.com. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.